You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. Live link also at thetrumpet.com. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the Wednesday edition, the 10th of August. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today. And it's interesting. We have the, of course, the Olympics going on. Pretty good night. Last night, if you're a U.S. fan, Michael Phelps won a few gold medals. He's up to 21 the last time I counted, which that's a lot of gold. And then the U.S. Women's gymnastic team, they also won gold as well.
Wow.
So they had a pretty good night. But gymnastics had a kind of an odd thing happen, too. This is I've never really heard of this happening before. This is a headline from the Business Insider. It says a bizarre scene unfolded in men's gymnastics as Ukraine lost on purpose by not even trying. So Ukraine made it into the medal competition, and then they decided to not try. They say the move baffled the gymnastics world, and now many are wondering if the team tanked on purpose to either better set themselves up for the individual events or if they had another reason. They're not sure. The Ukrainian men team qualified seventh for the eight-team final, but during the final, they simply didn't try. This one gentleman, I apologize in advance for his name, my pronunciation, Maxim Semikiv, I believe, close somewhere in there. He did a routine on the high bar, and he walked up to the high bar. He jumped up and he grabbed it and he waited a second and then he dropped down and then he bowed and walked off. Now, I could even do that.
Wow. There's no doubt he was not trying. I was waiting for the proof, but that's pretty clear.
That's pretty clear evidence that they were not interested. So they finished. Ukraine finished 72 points behind Japan, the gold medal winner. That's a pretty big loss. So the word that we had received, they say, is that this was a planned strategy by Ukraine to put up all gymnasts, or sorry, to not put up all gymnasts in the team final. So that's, they don't know exactly why, but that was a planned strategy. One of the gymnasts from Ukraine said that one of their members was injured and couldn't compete, so they let it go. But according to the rules, you can replace that person with somebody else. The fans of Switzerland are very upset because they finished 3 points behind Ukraine to get into the medal round. Wow. So they weren't able to get past the qualifying round. And then the team that beat them didn't even try. So they're pretty upset about it.
That would be just infuriating. But I guess so much for the Olympic ideal when you see a team do something like that. It's supposed to be about sportsmanship and achieving the very best. And these people dare to not even try.
Yeah, their excuse for it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. A lot's happened in Ukraine over the last couple of years, and I don't know if this was legitimately they just have some sort of athletic strategy. I don't know what it would be. The first thing I thought was like some sort of a political protest, but there's no indication of that at this point. But Ukraine's had a lot of problems over the last couple of years with Russia, so I thought, well, maybe they were protesting in some fashion, but there's no indication that that's the case.
Yeah, what is the point? So they're saying it's going to help them in the individual competition if they fail as a team. How does that even work? I can't figure that out.
Well, I guess they potentially were thinking that they would just save their energy or something.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But that makes no sense. I mean, I suppose since they came in seventh in qualifying, they figured we don't have a shot at this.
Possibly.
But that flies in the face of the ideals behind the Olympics, which is give it your best shot. You look at, even say, I was watching swimming the other night, and they focus on the top three, obviously, and those that are really close. But in every race, you can always see one or two that are way back. You know, you're like, are they even going to finish this race?
Right.
And so, you could think, well, why even bother? But hey, they were an Olympian. They weren't the best in the world, but they went to the Olympics, and they were what? Top 10 in the world. I mean, that's a great achievement, even if you don't medal.
Right, still better than the vast majority of people who participate in that particular sport. and you get a free vacation out of it, from what I understand. So a pretty good deal.
Yeah. It's disappointing to see people not try when they obviously should. Another interesting story from the Olympics was yesterday, one of the athletes, he won the bronze medal in judo. So you figure that's a pretty tough guy. Well, to celebrate his medal, he goes down to the beach, and he gets beaten up and robbed.
What?
And he ends up in the hospital.
Oh, no.
I thought, well, who's the guy that beat him up?
Oh, man. I heard earlier in the judo competition there was a pretty bad arm break. So, I mean, yeah, if you can take a person and flip him off your hip and just completely turn him upside down and slam him on the ground, you have some pretty useful techniques, you'd think, to fend off a robbery or an attack.
The guy, this Olympian, he was hit in the face. So it could be that he didn't see it coming. You know, it was a blindside or something. And he's okay. He went to the hospital just, I think, for precautionary, you know, measures. And then he had a picture up today, smiling. He still kept his medal. They didn't get the medal from him, but they stole his phone. But he's got a pretty good black eye, which, you know, it's funny because you look at that picture and you'd figure, oh, he got hit during the competition. No, it was when he went to the beach and they got robbed.
Well, yeah, I think judo, it's mainly based on throwing someone else around. So maybe he doesn't have very many good striking techniques, wasn't prepared to get punched in the face. Because that's not really part of judo.
Yeah, it's really, really strange to see something like that happen. But thankfully, the guy got to keep his medal. This is another headline here. This is from Yahoo Finance. If you're a fan of Sears and Kmart, well, they're going to close about 80 stores. They've been closing a lot of stores lately.
Yeah, I've seen fewer and fewer of them.
We used to have a Sears in one of the malls here, close to where we are, and now it's a clothing store. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to go in there and I look around. I think, hey, I bought a lawnmower here one time.
Is it Von Maur now? Is it that one?
Yeah,
yeah, because that changed the entire side of the mall. It's a huge sign for it, so the whole mall looks completely different.
Yeah,
now.
It's one of their flagships there. But yeah, it used to be a Sears. And so Sears have been closing down, and then also Kmart's. I don't even know if we have a Kmart here in Edmond anymore. We used to.
I haven't seen one in like 10 years.
It used to be where Academy is.
Yeah,
that
right.
Used to be Kmart, and then they swapped that out. So the chain said in April that it would accelerate the closing of 78 stores, including 10 Sears stores and 68 Kmart stores. All but two were expected to close in late July. They have a list of the stores. If you go to Yahoo Finance, you can find that list. Not in every state, but quite a few states have some. Sears has been struggling, of course. In the most recent quarter, Sears sales dropped 8.3% to $5.39 billion. Same-store sales dropped 7.1% at the company's namesake stores and fell 5% at Kmart stores. So, you know, it's funny because I remember in the 80s, it seems like Kmart was kind of the store, the big Kmart, and the blue light special and the whole bit. And then, of course, you have Walmart come on the scene. You've got Target come on the scene. And it gets more competitive. And then with Sears, I don't know who their main competitors would be. I would think it'd be like Home Depot and Lowe's here in this area. And then, of course, there's some regional places. But a lot of competition, and maybe that's why they're hurting. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think Kmart people have always said that they have a lot of great deals there, but you have a company as big as Walmart or Target, they could probably undercut prices no problem and offer more deals. So I had no idea Sears and Kmart were affiliated, so that's news to me as well.
It is funny when there are different companies and you kind of think they're separate, but they're actually...
Yeah.
I remember when I first got into radio, actually, and I went and worked at one particular radio station, and I thought they were kind of all competing, and they sort of were, but then I realized they were all owned by the same guy.
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, I guess we're competing, but at the same time, the same guy's making money no matter what.
Your whole goal is to just crush the other guy's ratings, and you realize that he's on the same team.
You see the guys from that station at the company events, and you're like, wait a second. we're all owned by the same company.
Earth-shattering.
It did shatter my world there momentarily. So they've announced here with Kmart and Sears that the company revealed that its chief financial officer, Robert Schreizim, would be leaving Sears to, quote, pursue other career opportunities. That might be a nice way of saying you're fired. I don't know. The company didn't say how many employees would be laid off as a result of the store closures. It's kind of interesting with some of these situations because on one hand, they say the economy is, as far as unemployment, is doing really well because the number's low. But, of course, there's a lot of people not in the workforce, so that kind of messes with that number. And then you have a situation here where, you know, the on-the-ground facts in some cases are these stores are closing, and that is going to cost some people their jobs.
Yeah, actually, the first thing I thought of when you said that was, oh, the poor company that's losing 78 stores. But really, the problem is the people who work in the stores. Probably each store has, like, what, 50 to 100 people working there, yeah, possibly. So that's, if you multiply that out, that's hundreds of thousands, you might think.
Good, it could affect quite a few people there. So interesting to see how that plays out. So if you, it's interesting too, because I actually remember when they closed the Kmart here. I don't know if they moved it to another location or if it was completely closing, but they always have the signs up, going out of business sale. I have very rarely gone into one of those and actually found some good sale. It's usually true. Like, well, this isn't that good of a deal.
Yeah.
They're probably just moving it to another store or something.
Well, that's the thing, because you'd think if they absolutely had to get rid of all the merchandise, it would be so marked down that people couldn't resist. But yeah, usually it's like maybe 2% off or something like, yeah, that. Oh, big deal.
They closed the, what was it, Macy's here locally in the Quail Springs Mall. I guess it was a few months ago or half a year ago. And we went in there because they had the big signs up, and just to look around, and nothing really that good of a deal. But they were actually selling the store fixtures like the shelves and the hanging, you know, the hangers, like everything. And it was kind of creepy in a way. I'm like, right. Wow, they weren't selling cash registers as far as I know, but just about everything else was going.
Selling full cash registers.
Yeah. How much is in there?
That's a great deal.
Yeah. We don't know what's in this one. We'll auction it off like that show Storage Wars, if you've ever seen that, where they go in there and they claim they can make a lot of money, but I don't think it's quite as accurate as they make it out to be. Because they'll always walk in there and they'll point at stuff and say, ah, $5,000, $2,000. And it's always weird stuff. I'm like, who's going to buy this? Like, who would buy this item that you claim you can sell for $2,000?
Yeah, good luck with selling that for $5,000.
Yeah. So and if they were that good at buying and selling, I don't think they'd need a TV show. I think they'd keep it quiet and keep making money.
That's right.
They're making most of their money with the TV show, I think.
That makes sense, yeah.
But anyway, there are a lot of people that are not in the workforce anymore. I think it's like almost 100 million, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, quite a few. And of course, if you can find a job and keep one, that's a very good thing. This headline says a Salesforce exec who hires more than 8,000 people a year shares one question she asks every job candidate. And so she has a way of figuring out if somebody's going to be a good fit. And the overall point that she makes is that small talk is important. She says it's good to have small talk because it shows if somebody is good at small talk, that means that they should be able to fit in most circumstances. They should be able to bridge, you know, divides between departments and that type of thing. Her name is Anna Riccio, and she leads a global team of more than 350 people, and they're responsible for hiring more than 8,000 people a year. She has 20 years of hiring experience at tech companies like Salesforce and Yahoo. She tells Business Insider that she loves to kick off interviews by asking candidates this one question. What is your favorite pump-up song and why?
You can learn a lot about someone from their answer to that.
Right. She says, it may seem like just a fun icebreaker, but how they respond also allows you to get a deeper sense of them and if they might be a good fit with your company's culture. And they say, luckily for candidates, there is no right or wrong answer to the question, but it's more about how they answer that speaks volumes about their personality and fit. So pretty interesting.
It seems like there would be plenty of wrong answers. Like if a person responds with a death metal song, you're like, well, you might not coexist so well with others. We'll maybe hold back on you.
That is a very, very true point. Yeah, depending on where you're trying to get a job, if you're if you're looking to be hired by a florist for spring, and you throw out one of these 80s metal songs that was popular back in the day, you may not be the fit. Hard to say.
That's a clash, extremely clashing things.
Although it is funny. You know, they have that expression, of course, you can't judge a book by its cover, meaning, you know, you can look at somebody and you may not know everything about them just by first look. And I remember going in my first day on one job that I had, and just kind of they'd point out, hey, there's so-and-so, and there's so-and-so, and this is what they do, and you say hello and move on. And there was one fellow who was he really stood out to me because he was dressed in all black. Yeah, it was a guy. He had a beard and long black hair, and kind of I suppose what you would consider a metalish looking individual that liked that type of music. And he did. He was really into it. And he wasn't particularly friendly off the bat, and I just thought, wow, that's an interesting guy. Turned out to be one of the greatest guys.
Oh, wow.
Super nice. Really, really, really good guy in terms of working with him. Mm-hmm. And just we got along really well, and I always thought back to how funny it was that first day, because I thought, wow, this guy looks like I'm going to give him a little bit of space. And we definitely had different tastes. But when it came to work and the working environment, he was great.
That's nice. I actually had a person I work with, kind of like a skater bro, and then 3 weeks later I found out that he was a girl. So maybe a little bit different there, but once again, I took a quick glance and I didn't closely inspect.
So you thought it was a guy?
Yeah.
But it actually was a, oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, so there were some things going on there, but she tried to look like a guy, so that's
right.
That was not really all my fault.
Yeah, well, a lot of times in that, say, people that skate and that type of thing, the clothes are baggier, and so it's
right,
hard to
exactly.
Maybe tell exactly what's going on. Yeah, well, that's definitely...
I was shocked. Like, can I just go home early today? I can't handle this right
you
now.
Did you end up putting your foot in your mouth at all?
No, thankfully. I never addressed... Well, the thing was... She had a name, I think it was Ashley, and like that, like we were talking a few days ago, I think that name is unisex now.
Yeah.
So you can't even really tell by that, but she had like the short haircut with like the bangs that she was always flopping off of her forehead. So, and she like talked kind of husky too, and always had a hat on, so I couldn't really tell that much.
Yeah, you have to be careful. You don't want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Some of those circumstances, but yeah. So anyway, I know some people really don't like small talk, and I think probably, you know, in relation to what this Salesforce exec is saying, that it is important. But I think also then there is a point of like, you know, enough,
because right.
you need to have, I think, that balance between a little bit of friendly banter and then it's time to get on with things. Because I also remember working with a sales guy who, you know, his job was sales, and they really have to kind of be on, as they say. And he did end up eventually losing his job. I don't know the ins and the outs of it. Probably he wasn't selling as much as he should have been, because that's the bottom line. But one of the things that was said about him was that he didn't know how to turn it off. He was kind of – I thought he was a nice guy and had no problems with him personally. But just the management felt that he just could never turn off the sales pitch. And so that got him in a little bit of trouble. So I think it probably is a fine line.
Yeah, there is a such thing as being too nice to where people start to wonder – if that's actually a real person standing in front of them. So you don't want to ever go that far.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is a balance there, but that is one of the things that is kind of important, being able to have a little small talk. And it is that's funny, just thinking about different jobs over the years that I've had. I'm sure everybody's like this, where there's always some interesting situations.
So many characters, and then just the things that people would think to do while they're at work. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into too many details, but it just, what is going on here? I thought we were here to work, and you're just doing off-the-wall things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's. I think everybody could probably write a book on some of the things they've run into from time to time. If you're, of course, it's, depending on when you're listening to this and where you are, we have a lot of listeners online at kpcg.fm. It might be getting close to lunchtime. It might be getting close to dinner time, or maybe midnight snack time. Hard to say. If you're hungry, though, Burger King, they've got something for you.
Yes.
It's the new Whopperito.
Wow.
Have you heard of this?
That's daring.
This is the burger burrito hybrid you've been waiting for, they say.
Wow.
Because sure, you know, you go up to the drive-thru and you're like, I feel like a burger, but I kind of feel like a burrito. They solved it for you. They
That's
solved
crazy.
The whole thing for you. They say, when it comes to fast food hybrids, Burger King may take the crown from sauce-infused buns, really, to chicken fries and mac and Cheetos, the burger chain has been on a roll with its trendy food mashups. And now, I feel like we should have some dramatic music, the Whopperito. They say after several months of testing, can you imagine being in the testing? Eat another one of these and tell me what you think.
Please make it stop.
No more. No more. The Burger Burrito Hybrid will launch nationally on August 15th. Mark your calendars. You've got a few days to prepare your body for this. They say we're infusing classic American fare with Tex-Mex flair. That sounds like a negative and a negative. Alex Macedo, he's president of Burger King's North American brand, said in a statement, he said the Whopperito is a new interpretation of the Tex-Mex trend in a way that only Burger King restaurants could imagine, and uses the classic flame-grilled 100% beef Whopper sandwich meat to set this Burger Burrito hybrid apart from other burritos out there. It's a competitive world in the burritos. You've got to make sure you stand apart.
Got to try and differentiate yourself from Taco Bell a little bit. I will say the chicken fries, that worked out. Those are good.
The Burger King chicken fries? Okay. They have funny commercials with those.
Yeah.
Make me laugh every time I see them. They say, so what exactly is the mysterious Whopperito? Here it is. So, get your appetite going here. Spiced beef, tomatoes, onion, lettuce, pickles, and a creamy queso sauce. Don't ask what's in that. Instead of mayonnaise, all wrapped up in a flour tortilla. In other words, it's a Tex-Mex flavored Whopper sandwich served in everyone's favorite burrito form. The Whopperito will cost just $2.99 or $4.99 as part of a combo meal, which seems like a pretty good deal, they say. Next time your group can't choose a cuisine, Mexican, American, Burger King is here to cater to all kinds of cravings. They say, watch out, Chipotle and Taco Bell. The king is coming for you.
It sounds more and more feasible the longer you talk about it. I thought it was crazy at first, but now I'm coming around.
I should see if they'll hire me to
you're very convincing.
Make this sound like a good idea. Oh, man.
It's working.
Well, I could see, you know, we were talking about just different workplace situations. I could see coming back from work or coming back from lunch one day and, you know, seeing one of your coworkers just not doing great. Kind of, you're like, hey, how's it going? I just look at you and say, Whopperito.
Nothing else needs to be said.
Everyone understands.
That's the source of my pain.
Say no more. Take the rest of the day. Oh. So, anyway, for those that this sounds great too, enjoy it. And for the rest, I think maybe not. Well, you've been warned.
Sorry for offending those of you who are looking forward to this.
I don't know. I prefer, if nothing else, I prefer to keep my my meals sort of separated. I'm not a big mix them together guy.
Yeah.
Some people don't care. Even when eating food off of a plate, sometimes people will mash everything together. That's never been my thing. I always kind of like to separate it. Or if I'm mixing it, I'm kind of particular about what I think goes together.
Yeah, that's probably smart. You don't want to mix sweet with savory too much, for example. But, you know, I think I'll make the sacrifice, try it out, come back here with a review.
Do it. Yeah, we'll have a Trumpet Radio Live Whopperito review. And we'll do that sometime after August the 15th.
Awesome.
when they release those. That will be Grant's last day on the air.
Do I at least get to use radio funds?
Yes.
Since it's a project for the radio?
Yeah. $2.99. We can't do the combo meal. We got to keep it in check. So that's kind of interesting when they come out with new foods. And I suppose, like anything, they do have to stay competitive. And they have to get in their meetings and say, anybody got a new dish you want to serve at Burger King? And they've got to make their push for it. So we'll see. I know we talked a while ago about Kentucky Fried Chicken. They tried to spruce things up. Don't know how they've done so far. Haven't heard much about it.
It sounded pretty motivational the way they were trying to rebrand themselves and get people fired up about chicken again.
Chicken University.
Yeah.
They're gonna have a I don't know. They could have a difficult time just because I think Chick-fil-A is so popular.
Yeah, they're faster too. I mean, if you go to KFC, it takes a while to fry up chicken.
Yeah.
And Chick-fil-A is pretty fast with just giving out sandwiches. So.
Yeah. It's if you can navigate the drive-through, then you can. That should be the driving test.
Yeah.
For people when they get their license, just go through the Chick-fil-A drive-through and try to figure out what's happening.
It's so packed over there.
It is packed. Yeah. Man. I really wish they would. We have a couple here in town. We've got that one on 2nd Street. It's like there's not enough room for all the traffic. There's just so many people trying to get in there and through there, and they get them through quick, but it's just there's only one. There's a couple of In-N-Outs. Full disclosure, I ate at Chick-fil-A yesterday for lunch, and we went inside because we didn't want to deal with the traffic. And so if people are familiar, those locally, those online, I apologize. You'll have to envision this. There's kind of one in and one out, obviously, and there's a little bit of a divide between the two. And the person in front of us was pulling out, and the person coming off of 2nd Street pulled in the exit. They got confused as to which was which, and so then everyone just kind of sat there. And the person on the road had to get in, I mean, because right. They were blocking traffic. So the person trying to exit had to back up, and the other person came in, and it was everyone worked together.
Right.
Solved the problem, but when you start having something so popular like that and a lot of people trying to get there around lunchtime, it gets to be pretty intense.
Yeah, I really think a big part of their popularity is just that they are religious. They're not even open on Sundays.
Yeah.
So I think this being the Bible Belt, a lot of people here support that.
That's good. They make pretty good stuff, especially in the vein of fast food. Mm-hmm. But they don't have a Whopperito.
They sure don't.
As far as I know.
They need to start branching out a little bit, taking some risks.
Mix up something really, really bizarre.
Serve some beef for once.
It was kind of funny, actually, because they, talking about mixing this stuff together, we've got a blender that we use, a BlendTec, and it makes pretty good smoothies and stuff. Every once in a while, I kind of kid with my wife, if we're making one, she'll say, "What do you want in there?" I'm like, "I don't know, throw a burger in there," but they're actually kind of doing it. I thought I was kidding, but I was ahead of the curve.
That's great.
Yeah, throw a burger in there and some pizza, and we'll just mix it all up.
I mean, if you like how it tastes when you eat it, if it's in a smoothie form, it's just a different texture. But
yes, it is.
Theoretically, shouldn't we still like it that way?
They call that like the football smoothie. Throw some chicken wings in there.
Yeah.
That's kind of the take. That's like the new age takeoff on John Madden's turduncan or whatever that was.
The turducken?
Yeah.
The turkey, the duck, and the chicken combined?
All jammed together into one delicious feast.
And that does sound delicious.
Yeah.
Is that a real thing, actually? Or
he makes them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can get it. I think I've seen them different places, but I'm not totally sure.
That's enticing.
It might have been a dream I had. Can't remember if it was real or not. So anyway, some of the headlines from today, some interesting ones, and then some some funny ones there too with the Whopperito, or delicious ones, depending on how you look at it. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program coming up here in a bit on KPCG. We always do two programs every day, 30-minute programs filling in for that hour. And so make sure that you listen for those. We have a new one coming out this Friday as well that has been taped recently. So some great repeats there that they're always tying into stuff that is going on, events that are happening in the news. So even when they're a year or two old, sometimes that's actually when they're even maybe a little more interesting in a sense, because mm-hmm. you can see some of the things that have happened. We were talking about the Ukraine gymnastics team and who knows what they were doing. But again, like I said, you think back to Ukraine and you think to all that's happened there. And we have some really good Key of David programs on that topic, what's happening in the Ukraine. It's fallen off the kind of the top headlines lately. But Ukraine, Russia, all that's happening over there, that's been talked about in the Key of David. We have some really good programs on that.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think what the next U.S. president will do about Ukraine. It sounds like Donald Trump will just move on and say, well, Russia already annexed Crimea. We'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt Hillary Clinton's going to do much different. So Ukraine's not in a good spot right now, and people have pretty much just moved on from it in the news cycle.
Yeah, they've forgotten about it in a lot of ways, and that's what's so interesting in the election. I do hope that when they get into some of the debates, they will begin to address some of these real-world issues. It's mm-hmm. a lot of back and forth and a lot of blaming, and he said this and they said that. And we're going to talk about in our second segment here in a little bit about the media bias against Donald Trump. I think everybody's noticed it. And there's a pretty good write-up about just exactly what the media is saying, and they're admitting it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about that here in the second segment. And again, it's not a matter of us having a candidate that we prefer. That's not the case at all. It's just a matter of looking at the media and asking the question, what kind of a country do you become when the media is biased? And they're not honestly reporting. They're just reporting what they're sort of told to report. How close are you to not being a democracy anymore?
Yeah, that's right. The media's function is to educate the people, not to sway them in either direction, but just to give them the information they need to make their own choices. Now it's like the media is treating everyone like children, saying, well, you're not smart enough to make the decision yourself, so let me just make it clear for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're going to talk about that story in a little bit. And again, listen for the Key of David programs here on KPCG, and a lot of great topics on those shows. And you can find the videos online at thetrumpet.com as well. And of course, they air nationally and around the world on television. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He was back behind the mic today after yesterday. They took a trip to some different areas around London, looking at some museums and such. So he has an update about that. That's for the Philadelphia Youth Camp. A bit of an update about some of their activities and events yesterday. So that'll be that's interesting. And then also he talks about America and how it is losing its longest war. And when he said that, I thought, what is the longest war? It's Afghanistan.
Right.
I guess I had thought kind of more about Iraq, but really it's Afghanistan. It's been about 15 years or so. And he's quoting from a write-up from The Week. They say that the president is leaving just enough troops in Afghanistan to avoid disaster on his watch, but few enough to claim that he has ended the war in Afghanistan. So again, it's a very politicized war. You know, it's not a war that we're really setting out to win. It's more of a politicized event.
And it's just amazing with all the power this nation has that we don't just end it the right way, not by withdrawing, but by crushing the enemy. And we keep on talking about that, but it doesn't seem like it's that hard to figure out. This is what you do. You end the threat, and then you can just take all the troops out and have no shame about it.
I've always been amazed by the training of Afghanistan troops, or we do it in other countries too, where we sit there and we train them, and then they take the weapons and turn them on us in some cases. It's very hard to change people's fundamental ideologies if they're very different from the U.S.'s. And in a place like Afghanistan or anywhere in the Middle East, with the exception of Israel and maybe a few other nations that are a little more friendly, Israel being the main one, but aside from them, the ideologies are completely different. I mean, Iran continually calls us a great Satan. Afghanistan has never been friendly to the U.S. Mm-hmm. unless they felt like, you know, we were about to really get after them. And so none of those areas have changed their ideology. So us going in there and trying to give them some sort of a pep talk about democracy or something, it just hasn't worked.
That's right. Yeah, Richard Palmer was talking about this either yesterday or the day before that on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. He basically said that America often gets confused and says, well, if we can just take out this one dictator, everyone else will be on our side. But really, the leader often reflects the will of the people, and the people don't think much differently. So if the dictator is not on our side, the people won't be on our side either, and the next leader won't be on our side.
And there's a long history of that, and Stephen Fleury brings that out on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Just look at the history of what's happened there in the Middle East, and it hasn't been great, to say the least. So really interesting Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure you listen for that. Comes up here in a bit on KPCG, and if you can't catch it live at 7 a.m. or some of the replays throughout the day, the archives are available online at kpcg.fm. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, take a look at some of this media bias that they're admitting to against Donald Trump. We'll talk about that right after this, Trumpet Radio Live.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. KPCG is supported by the Philadelphia Church of God. The PCG produces thetrumpet.com, a news website analyzing current events and Bible prophecy. Thetrumpet.com includes daily updates, analysis, and a unique perspective based on the Bible. More information is available online at thetrumpet.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, You can do that at KPCG FM. We send out some pictures of rainbows sometimes and also other things, but people tend to like our rainbow outside the studio shot. But we'll send some links about programming and some updates. Also, if you'd like to email us, please do that. comments@kpcg.fm. You can comment on any program here or just the station in general, and we take a look at those. But you can also comment about Trumpet Radio Live, and we're happy to look at those, and we appreciate those comments and suggestions as well. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with you here today. So we were talking, Grant, quite a bit. I think a lot of people have noticed that when you go through the headlines, they're very much top-heavy with anti-Trump sentiment. And it's getting pretty intense to the point now where they're not even really denying it. This article here from Fox says, media justify anti-Trump bias. They claim he's too dangerous. That's a quote. Too dangerous for normal rules. Pretty intense.
Yeah, that's quite a stretch when the media has one job and they're saying, well, we're not going to do our one job because we perceive that there's a threat that you little people below us can't even understand. We have to make this threat known to you.
Yeah, and I feel like, okay, if that's true, if he's too dangerous, they should be able to present just the facts mm-hmm. and let them speak for themselves. The implication would be, I guess, on the other side that Hillary Clinton is not in any way a danger. But yet we've seen some real problems in her political career that are pretty alarming as well.
Right.
But those aren't being covered in the same way.
Oh, right. The worst you can say about Donald Trump is, oh, well, he doesn't want Muslims from terrorist countries or terrorist-sponsoring countries to come here until we know who they are. And if you just think about that on the surface and you're willing to acknowledge the problem that we're having in that area, you would say, well, what's really the issue there? But then you attach, oh, well, he's a racist and he's an Islamophobe, whatever that means, then it sounds a lot worse. And that's kind of what the media has to do to make his viewpoint sound worse.
Yeah, and he definitely is a guy that creates opinion. People have an opinion about him. He is very strong in what he says. He's very opinionated in what he says. And so, again, what we're highlighting here isn't, is he a good candidate or not or anything like that. It's just the media has already picked who they want to win, and they're just going to keep pushing it. And that doesn't seem to be what the media is supposed to be designed for.
It's not at all. Yeah. And this writer here comments that he is not criticizing commentators because they're actually paid to give their opinions. There are a lot of hack commentators out there who just give crazy opinions, but at least that's their job. He is mainly criticizing the mainstream media's reporters, editors, and producers. Their entire credo is supposed to be fairness, but where is the fairness when right after both conventions, all of a sudden you just unleash this avalanche of attacks on one candidate, and at the same time, coincidentally, the other candidate has plenty of scandals that you're burying with these attacks.
And this is not like it's a new phenomenon. I mean, the media has definitely had their opinion on things, but it seems like in the past, maybe they were a little more subtle with it. Some of this stuff is not subtle at all, to the point where they're just like, there was a headline last week, and I think we mentioned it briefly. Whoever was writing, I think it was Washington Post, they went and found a bunch of psychologists to give their expert opinion about Donald Trump, not based upon any sort of sitting down and talking to him. I don't think it was just mm-hmm. based upon what we saw him on TV, or he has said this, or we heard he said this, and they threw out this big opinion of him, and then they print it. As if that is investigative journalism, and that's just an opinion piece, and it's kind of a bought and paid opinion. Because right. If one of them came and said, "I think he's a great guy," it wouldn't have made it.
Exactly,
it's bought and paid. It's like expert, witness.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get the person that's going to say what you want,
right?
And then they just push that off like that's investigative reporting, and it's not.
Well, that's just the media failing to do their one job. It's to unearth the facts and to present those facts, not to hide facts that don't support your already determined viewpoint and just show the facts that do support your side. And a lot of these media members are openly saying, like this one investigative journalist, that the U.S. media is essentially 100% united vehemently against Trump and preventing him from being elected president. And he's a liberal investigative journalist, and he totally agreed with this because, you know, these are dangerous times. He's saying some dangerous things like we should build a wall to protect our own borders because somehow that's such a terrible thing. Not having borders is actually a communist ideal, but no one's saying anything about that. They're just saying that he's a racist.
Yeah. Well, even today, just looking at some of the headlines, CNN's main headline, at least at the time of this program, is what Trump is saying is dangerous. So, you know, they're making making him the big story there mm-hmm. because of some comments that he made about the Second Amendment last evening. And whether he meant what they think he meant or not, it's a back and forth argument. But in any event, they just keep going after him. Now, it's interesting though because they keep putting him up as the top story and really running him down. But at the same time, he's a top story mm-hmm. every day. I just wonder if it's going to backfire on them.
Right. And if you just think about it, though, for the media to be balanced, when they print a story that says what Trump is saying is dangerous, they also are obligated to print a story that says what Hillary is doing is dangerous. She's actually done a lot of things based on all proof. She is a criminal who hasn't been indicted for being a criminal based on the email scandal, based on the Benghazi scandal. And yet there's no story about that. It's all about things that Trump is saying. He hasn't actually done anything dangerous or harmful to the country, but based on what he's saying, that's somehow worse than what the other candidate has actually already done.
Yeah, a lot of times they talk about the this group, the silent majority, if they're out there, I don't mm-hmm. know. But we know what the media thinks.
Right.
And we know what extreme elements on both sides think. I wonder what people more in the middle think. You know, it's hard to say because they don't really have a voice, except I guess when it comes to voting.
Right. That a lot of the time, if the voting is really close, they could actually swing the election. It's a little strange to think that you could be so in the middle that one time you'll swing to this side and swing to the other, depending on you know, what you favor that year. But the belief systems of the two parties are so radically different now, it's hard to be in the middle anymore. You pretty much have to pick a side.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point you bring up because I think it's more polarizing than ever in terms of the two candidates. I mean, it's not like there's a lot of common ground. I mean, they're painting themselves at least as the most opposite that they could be. So for somebody like you say to kind of be on the fence, I don't know. I mean, maybe somebody will be and kind of wait for the debates or something. But people are pretty. Pretty much in one camp or the other, it seems like, but the media is in definitely the Hillary Clinton camp, and that could be considered, I guess, at some point in the past, maybe an inflammatory comment. But they're admitting this. Mm-hmm. This is the story that they're reporting. So they're saying, hey, we don't care. We don't want him. He's too dangerous, and that's what we're gonna push.
And they forget that their entire job is one thing. It's not to choose the next president of the United States. It's to report the facts and let the people decide that. And for some reason, the media now thinks it's their job to choose, and it's not. This liberal reporter said, if you view a Trump presidency as something that's potentially dangerous, then your reporting is going to reflect that. You would move closer than you've ever been to being oppositional, which in this case actually means openly supporting Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump, because that's the opposition. He goes on to say, that's uncomfortable and uncharted territory for every mainstream non-opinion journalist I've ever known, and by normal standards, untenable. But now it's okay, apparently. And it just really, when I read this story, it reminded me of the Obama administration and how they just say, well, We love the Constitution when it supports what we believe, but when it doesn't, the Constitution needs to be updated. You can't have it both ways. You either agree with it or you don't.
And there have been some very specific attacks, I guess, and I don't think this is some big secret, against what would be considered more conservative journalism in the country. I guess if you consider Fox more conservative, which some would. They've definitely been attacked. There's a lot of written about that anybody could read. Judge Report's another one that they kind of go after. talk radio, Rush Limbaugh, those guys, because they do have quite an audience, and they because it's a different opinion, they don't like it, the liberal side, and they're trying to shut it down. But to do that again, that gets you out of a democracy, and it puts you into some sort of totalitarian state.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot written, and if anybody's read some of the history of say Russia, well, particularly the USSR in the late 80s, early 90s, as they kind of fell apart, and then Putin has gotten them kind of back to where they were. But they talk a lot about that media cycle and how you had to be really careful in what you said, and then they got a little bit of freedom to where they could start reporting a little more honestly. And that was such a amazing thing for some of those people to have the freedom to do that. And they hadn't had that. And then, of course, that freedom didn't last very long. But we take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of places in this world, there is no freedom of the press. I mean, they'll have their little press, but it's all state-run.
Right.
And so people should be careful. Even if there's an opinion they don't agree with, just the freedom for somebody to express it at least, that's a freedom that it's too easy to take for granted, and we could be losing.
Right. We are slipping down toward those totalitarian states and the way that they controlled every aspect of the media, because the media is now openly admitting they're in the radical left's pocket. They're supporting that side, and it's hindering their ability to just give us the facts. That I keep saying it. That is their job. It's just to give the facts. We don't care what your personal views are if you're not even a paid commentator.
Yeah.
You're a journalist. You're supposed to be objective. And if you're not doing that, it's an epic failure. And you can't even consider yourself a professional.
Yeah, what's the point of the media if they're not going to be honest? The other thing, too, is for those that are writing and kind of or involved in any branch of media and are really on board with this, saying we got to stop Trump at all costs because he's too dangerous. What makes them sure they're right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to think something, but based upon what? And again, maybe he is. But if he is, wouldn't the facts alone support that?
Mm-hmm.
Without all the and but what about the facts on the other side?
Right.
Can we look at both sides? Can't the American people look at both sides honestly? And they're admitting here in this this write-up that no, you can't.
No, that's a huge problem. The media coverage has grown so shallow now that it's really about let's attack the one we don't like. We can't really say much about the policies. And in this case, actually, extremist groups have backed both candidates. I believe neo-Nazis and the KKK have backed Donald Trump. The Communist Party is thrilled at Hillary Clinton's nomination. So why aren't people kind of thinking, well, you know, this is something that needs to be talked about? Both sides have a problem, and yet they're only attacking one side. They're not discussing issues anymore. It just becomes childish playground attacks.
Yeah, it's really interesting to look at, and of course it affects everybody in this country, and it affects the world too, because the U.S. has a major impact on a lot of places in the world. And the other thing that's interesting too, I guess a good way to think about it is if you break it down to a personal level, if you have a media machine that makes and breaks people, well, let's hope none of us ever get on that radar, right?
Right.
You know, most cases you'd think, well, why? You know, why would a normal person, I suppose, get in their radar. But what if somebody did? It does happen.
Right.
And then can you imagine being a person that was on their bad side? They just run negative headlines about you every day, all day, and what are you going to do about it? That's
right.
The danger. You know, it's easy to look at it like, well, these are the big political players, but what's more troubling is the machine that's being built to just control people's thinking.
And it's a machine that could turn on any of them at any time as soon as they don't toe the party line, which is what they're doing now. They could easily be called out. So why is that what the media has become? If you feel so strongly about a candidate, at least go point by point through every view in great detail and say, using facts and logic, how these are the best points. don't call someone a racist. That's pretty much the worst insult you can call someone now. Prove your points and logically disprove the other person's points and stop just attacking one side. Everyone can see through the bias.
Yeah, it's getting to be pretty thick, as they say, and this write-up that we're talking about really highlights that media justify anti-Trump bias, and they claim he's too dangerous for normal rules. Wow, who decides that well, the rules don't apply? Well, the rules do have to apply, or else we don't have the rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
We have the rule of dictators.
Well, the thing is, they're not going to like it so much if, by some miracle, conservatives take over the mainstream media and they do the exact same thing. Well, we would normally report objectively and honestly, but this one time, we don't want your side to have any chance of winning because it will destroy the country. We don't believe the people can make the right choice, so we're just going to take over from here. No, how would they like it if the exact same thing was done to them?
The outrage, of course, would be yeah, would be high, and justifiably, because nobody should be treated to this one-sided sort of treatment. And I think back to, I think we all remember the last year, or maybe a little more than that, of President Bush's presidency, and the media turned on him. I've never seen it be quite so brutal until maybe I guess now with Donald Trump. But you know, everything was his fault. You had a bad day, it was his fault.
Yeah,
everything. He did nothing right, couldn't do a thing right. And I would hope a lot of people realize that that was one-sided. I mean, there's mistakes made, and then they should be reported on to a point, but it was just over the top. And then of course the celebrities jumped on board as if that matters, you know.
Mm.
The I remember, you know, people recording entire albums of music against, you know, him. Yeah, there was blowouts about that years back, and it was so bad. So I just think, wow, if Donald Trump did win the presidency, can you imagine what the media would do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would just be a firestorm every day.
Yeah.
I can see where people would start saying, very competent and qualified people would start saying, leadership in this country isn't for me.
Right.
And that we know that's going to happen because the Bible talks about that.
Right. People with great reputations, people with actual capabilities to lead are going to say, well, that is not anything I want to be around. I don't want to be attacked every single day. And if you remember from George W. Bush's presidency, the main criticism of him that just stands out is they just attacked his accent. They attacked like some of the words he would use on accident sometimes. And it's just childish, biting, sarcastic stuff. Attack the issues and keep it to that. And don't just always inject your hatred for someone into your reporting.
Right. They made him out to be stupid.
Right.
And which is so funny because most of the people saying that, you want to compare, you know, their what they did in life to what he did.
Yeah.
Like,
let's not have that conversation.
Not much of a...
It'd be embarrassing for you.
Yeah, not much of a comparison there. So I think it's a very dangerous trend. And again, we're not... it's not like we're digging around the corners of the internet to find this. This is main stories that we're discussing. I think they're important. Media justify anti-Trump bias. They just claim he's too dangerous for normal rules. You can read more about that at Fox. Or there's quite a few write-ups about...
They put it right out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not hard to find those quotes.
Go look for yourself. You can look on pretty much any news website and just count the stories. You know, one other thing that I wanted to mention before we sign off on this topic is just looking at some of what's being reported, it does really push the temperament of the country. It raises the temperature on certain issues. And they're really doing that with the racial issues in the cities. Just some of the headlines over the last couple of days. This one's from CNN. Baltimore cops stop black man 30 times but don't charge him, feds say. There's another story about, I forget where this was. I just saw it earlier. It was in the East Coast, I believe. And a white man shot a black man. There was a disturbance in the street. It was early in the morning, and he called the police, and then he went out there, sort of a neighborhood watch type situation, and fired a gun and killed somebody. All the details haven't come out. It doesn't seem like it was good on any level on either side of what happened there. but these are being highlighted again, and they're just keeping they keep pushing these. And even here with this Baltimore situation, they threw out a general comment of, well, the police force is racist, you know, again today. And so people are reading these headlines, and I just think, well, it's really easy to write that, but at the same time, they are really raising the temperature in those cities. Earlier today, or actually it was yesterday, Baltimore State's attorney, Marilyn J. Mosby, anticipated, she hadn't even seen it yet, maybe she had, that the report will, quote, likely confirm what many in our city already know or have experienced firsthand. So that's pretty inflammatory. Then they throw in this caveat, she does, while the vast majority of Baltimore City police officers are good officers, we also know that there are bad officers and that the department has routinely failed to oversee, train, or hold bad actors accountable. Well, when you're on the street as a uniformed officer, how are people supposed to differentiate? They think they're going to see what they read from this. I think what I read from it is that they're all bad.
Exactly. That's what it sounds like.
And, you know, they throw the caveat in that, well, they're mostly good. But the whole story, and again, this comment about them being a lot, most of them being good, third to last paragraph, and everything else on top of it is they're against African Americans, they're doing this, they're doing this. Who reads that far down anymore to the bottom of the report? So again, this just highlights, I think, what we were talking about here with the media, that they're choosing to really push this out there and make an issue out of it. And again, I think it's going to cause people to have certain attitudes and feelings.
Right, and the plain truth about it is that a lot of the things the media is supporting are communist ideals, you know, not having any borders, undermining law enforcement so that the national government has to take over. I mean, that just sets it up for a tyranny. So they're really pushing some dangerous ideas themselves.
Absolutely. I want to mention an article before we close today. This is from the Trumpet editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury. It's at thetrumpet.com if you go there and click on the Gerald Fleury tab. The article is titled, America Faces an Explosion of Racial Violence. This is from the 1st of August. Assassinations of police officers in Dallas and Baton Rouge mark a dangerous escalation of race hatred. America's highest-ranking leaders are fueling the problem. And, you know, we all need, because the media says a lot about this, we all need to get the truth about what's going on. You're going to find that here at thetrumpet.com in this article in particular. America faces an explosion of racial violence. So make sure you stop and check that out. I'd highly recommend that.
It's an awesome article for sure. I read it yesterday.
It's one of those things where it's the unfiltered truth about the issue, and you're not going to get that. Certainly not going to get it in most of the media, as they admit.
They do admit it.
They admit it. That'll do it for us today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and the Trumpet Hour today as well. We'll see you back here tomorrow. You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.